This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
For the roll call, if you could say your name and where you're from.
Greg Manson from Perth.
Erica Webb from Perth.
Nadia Maggiale
from
Melbourne.
Okay, so my dog's Olympia.
And I have Memphis. He's a 3-year-old puppy.
Yoshi's about 2.5, and I live not that far away here in Sydney.
Hi, it's Kevin Murphy from Melbourne with Kane. He's 11 and a bit grumpy old man.
I am Francois from Melbourne with 6-year-old Nordic.
Hi everybody, it's Martina Williamson from New Zealand and the World Bank Union, and I didn't bring with me my dog, but his name is Bisson.
I'm Ross, and Sadie from Bundaberg.
I'm Katie, and I've got Sadie, and we're from Newcastle, and Sadie's 3 years old.
I'm Peggy, and I've got Tessa. And I'm from Melbourne.
Hi, it's Jennifer from Jenny, and I'm from Melbourne, and Ilka's not quite 2 yet.
I'm Penny, and I'm from Melbourne, and I've got Ollie.
I'm Kathy, and I'm from Sydney,
and I'm on a wait list.
I'm Annette, and I've got Leo, who is 3, and we are from Dubbo.
He's a horse.
I'm Vanessa from Hobart, and I've got guide dog Yuri, who is 5, and he's awesome.
Rowena from Sunshine Coast, Queensland. My dog is 6-year-old Faith.
Hi, I'm Diana. I'm from Hobart, and I have 27-month-old Bertha.
Hi, I'm Ben. I'm with Awesome. That's Awesome Wells. And he's Awesome. He's 6 years old, and we're both from Blacksland to the Blue Mountains.
I'm Katrina, I'm from Melbourne, and I've got Ali. She's about 3, I think.
I'm Darren Gripsky, I live in Melbourne.
He doesn't have a dog.
Hi, I'm Judy Meyer with Guide Dogs New South Wales, ACT.
Hi, I'm Melinda Bowden, I'm Judy Meyer with Guide Dogs New South Wales, ACT.
Hi, I'm Paul Adrian, so we've got Guide Dogs New South Wales ACT. I don't have a guide dog, but I do have a pet dog called Violet, and I'm going to discuss it with anybody who wants to visit.
Hi, I'm John Russ from Guide Dogs Victoria.
Hi, I'm Lester from Vision Australia Seeing Eye Dogs, and yeah, my pet name is, she's called Dolly.
My name's Dom, and I'm from Western Sydney. I'm here with Watson Girl 7.
Hi, I'm Chris Scott, I'm Dom's wife. I have a pet dog called Oscar. And he's 16.
Oh. Hi, I'm Annie, and my dog Nessie, and we're from Perth.
Hi, I'm Glenn, I'm about an hour away from here, and I've got to see my dog Thomas, who's 5 and a half.
Hi, I'm David, I've got great dog Whitney, sounds like a bus stop, 6 years old, male from Queensland, originally from New Zealand.
I'm Clover, and I have a pet dog called Whitney.
My name is George James Latourba. I have told his 2 and a half, came with him in April, and he took his first aeroplane flight yesterday. I checked him.
My name is Chen Hock. I identify myself as from Perth, but from Singapore as well. My guide dog is 66. Nice. And she's from Guide Dogs for the Blind in San Rafael, U.S., California. It's my second working guide dog, but actually my third dog. I'll tell you more later. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Let's hear it for the dogs and let's hear it for the pets. As I said, if anyone doesn't have a goodie bag, put up your hand, stand up, wave, all of the above, and you'll get one. So we're a little bit early, which is very cool, because we will probably need a little bit of extra time. We're doing a group photo, hopefully, on a set of really wide stairs that have been identified somewhere in the hotel. And so that will give us a little bit more time to organise that after our keynote speaker. So I'd like to introduce our treasurer, Greg Madsen, to undertake the next session. Thanks.
Thanks, Nadia. We're very privileged today to have again, we've spoken at one of our conferences in the past in Adelaide, Kwok Cheng Hock, originally from Singapore, but a man that has got probably the world record for travel between Singapore and Perth with a guidebook. He's done it a lot. We've got some travel sessions coming up later in the conference, but Cheng Hock is one of those people that could very well relate to that, a man that's travelled extensively around Asia, to the US, to Europe, with his dog. Can I introduce to you, please, make him welcome, Kwok Cheng Hock.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share with you a little bit of my life. But my talk is a little bit selfish, afraid I did not speak anymore. Nadia, thank you very much for the invitation, and I would like to thank Greg for the opportunity as well that he took to extend to me this invite to come and speak to you today. I must identify myself first as a guide dog user, as this is a dog guide and this association name. And I'm here today to share with you a little bit about my life experience and also how the Guide Dogs program came to Singapore. I must also acknowledge my early experiences with guide dogs. My first place of association with dog guides was actually Victoria Guide Dogs in Kew, way back in 1977. I visited them because Guide Dogs Victoria, or the Kew Guide Dogs actually, we say, employed or took away one of Singapore's most established O&M instructor. He was my cane instructor, and he was tall, and he actually went to work for Guide Dogs in 1976-77. So when I visited Australia for the first time, automatically I went to visit him, and he actually showed me what Guide Dogs Victoria was doing. So that's how I became very keen on exploring that opportunity because I read a lot of guide dogs this year. I acknowledge also Seeing-Eye Dog, that time known as Lady Nell, in 1982, because I came to do a special education in Victoria College, which is not part of the place where Kevin Rocket works in now, isn't it, Kevin?
That's right.
Yeah, so I did my special education in 1982 in Burwood. And part of my program was an attachment to Victoria guide dogs again. So more exposure to dogs. And of course in 77 I also visited the Royal New Zealand Foundation for the Blind in their guide dogs program. So that actually got me really excited about looking for a dog and to use a guide dog. Now my dog's name is Gracious, but she's commonly known as Grace, because the puppy raiser felt it too daunting to call my dog Gracious, so we call her Grace. So today she's known as Grace, but the veterinary department will always refer to her as Gracious. So we got Faith, we got Grace. Okay, now I talked about that dog experience in 82. I spoke to that dog before, because I was trained here, and I wanted to use a guide dog, but there was not much time. So I said, can I be trained after my special education program? And they told me, yes, you may be considered, but you get $4,000 to pay. This was 1982. And my pay was only $250 at time. And I'm going to buy the dog. So maybe now, you'll be acknowledging Phyllis Rachel tonight, is it? Actually, met up with me because I also visited them, and she put me on a 6 weeks program after my graduation from Burwood College. And I stayed in Melbourne for 6 weeks then to train with Stacy. And they actually brought the dog to Singapore for me in January of 83. But unfortunately, Singapore was not quite ready because Singapore was still a young nation. Became so-called independent in 1965, and there were several occasions where there were racial riots between the racial groups. And unfortunately, it was perceived that the certain sector of the community would not be very happy with dogs in the community. So the law was not changed, and I had to walk wherever I went with my dog. It was not allowed on the buses. Taxi drivers to run out of the taxi if I went in the taxi. So there was no way things were going to go for me. And eventually the bus drivers were so tired of me. The bus company told the drivers, if this blind man came out with his dog into your bus, just turn off the engine. Don't chase him down. Let the passengers do it. Wow. So it was that nasty because initially the bus drivers would be scolded by the passengers because he used to go. And the lineman was no problem. But if you turn off the engine and not move and don't slow the lineman, the passengers would get a line out. So it was quite a bit of a circus game, and it went on for a year and a half. 1984, I entered the dog. So it was very unfortunate. But my new point I'm about to share with you today is as a dog, as a guide of the Dog Guide Association, there are a lot of things that can happen. As blind people, you believe in yourself, believe in what you believe in, and work on it. Be patient, things will come to pass. And this is what the self-advocacy work has shown itself in the world. That blind people, when taught their skills, can eventually bring things to pass in the law to negotiate your rights or the opportunities that you help blind people. I waited 21 years. And in 03, I was already by then chairing the World Blind Union, Southeast Asia or Asia Pacific region. And we had a conference in Singapore. But before that happened in the year 2001, I was actually flying to Santo Domingo to participate in the International Blind Sports Association's World Assembly. I was on the route from Singapore to Santo Domingo, I was flying Singapore, Taipei, LA, and then to Santo Domingo. It was a 911. And when the plane landed in Taipei, I was told we were to stop here for a couple of hours because the plane cannot continue in the US. It was at 9:30 at night. 8:30 in New York. And that was the time when the planes hit the Twin Towers. So what happened to me was I was confined to the hotel room, just enjoying lunch, dinner, and breakfast, watch TV as a blind man, and wait for us to tell you when you can go on your next sector of your flight. And you cannot watch too much TV except just watch what's happening in the US. And lo and behold, a blind man came on the air. He was interviewed by CNN. His name is Michael Vincent. So I asked him, oh, yeah, has not. So he shared on how he actually got up on the 3,000, and I think you know the story.
Yeah.
So I said to my mind, I said, this is a guy I must catch up with. Because remember, by year 2000, I was already actively promoting technology for the blind. I had the opportunity to be traveling to the US regularly. I was a friend of Matthew, which is the NMP's Guide Dog Users Association. Okay, it's one of the National Association of Guide Dog Users. At the same time, in as watching the TV, I realized that there was something that the guide dog could do, and I was then sent to my famous get back to the guide dog's world. So many things were happening in Singapore at the time as well. Laws were beginning to be changed. The government was becoming more open to enhancing social benefits for blind people and other people with disabilities. I also happened to have met up with several friends of mine who became members of parliament and were willing to look at issues affecting people with disabilities. And in 2003, I actually set up my mind to meet up with Guide Dog programs again. And I came back to my roots, Guide Dogs Victoria. And I met up with John Rossi again. And I said, if I want to use a guide dog, what are the opportunities now that things have gone on the long way? It's almost 3 years since I last spoke to him. And he said, the price has gone up to 30,000. If you want, we have the 30,000 because we're going to send our instructors to Singapore to see to support you. So, you know, that's a good idea, but let me think about it. And of course, I was already attending NFP conventions regularly at that time. And hopefully, I was supposed to meet up with Dr. Vincent at the NFP convention. But he was invited to speak to Guide Dogs in Ireland to help them with fundraising. So I missed him. But the WBU met in Singapore in 2003 and I invited Ian Cox, whom I got to know during 1982 as well, and I visited him in New Zealand when I was there for the WBU meeting. I must acknowledge Martin. Martin, well done to your work. Guy. Yeah, my New Zealander friend there as well. So Ian Cox was with the New Zealand Guide Dogs Federation or Foundation, and he came to visit me in Singapore to at least look at Singapore to see how feasible it would be to use guide dogs. And he said Singapore is a perfect place. And he told me about how he worked with the Changi Airport authorities to make sure that guide dogs have a chance of leaving when they flew from Australia, New Zealand to England. Because ordinarily you fly to Singapore and that is already 9 hours of the flight, the dog needs to leave. And they told me about what they did in Changi Airport to provide a facility for dog relief. So I said, then I must work actively to get that going. And he spoke to the World Blind Union Regional Assembly at the time as well on Guide Dog Relief. So put things short, 2004 I met up with Michael Hinkson at the NFP and he introduced me to Guide Dogs San Rafael, whom he was looking for at that time. And I told them about my experience with a dog in 1983, 84, and how I would want to start the Guide Dogs program in Singapore. The CEO of Guide Dogs then, Bob Felix, was very supportive. The Guide Dog community was very supportive. They told me that after interviewing me, having a walk with me with a dog whom I had not met before, I met for the first time, I was able to instruct the dog how to get around. So they said they think I still have some basic guide dog skills with me after 20 years. So, we were in business. I went to Singapore. One of the requirements was to work with the government to get legislative changes. Ian Cox in 2003 also went with me to visit several government departments. And Singapore Government Housing, or we call it Housing Development Board, is the major authority on accommodation for Singaporeans. 85% of Singaporeans live in high-rise apartments. And they rule that only small dogs are allowed in the apartments, and only one dog is allowed. A Labrador is a huge dog, compared to a smaller dog. So I went to have a discussion with them and said, yeah, we need to look at it. Since the world is moving towards rights of persons with disability, we will look at that when the time comes. I went to the bus company and I told them that in 1984, when I gave up my dog, the train system was being built. And when the train system was launched in 1987, they already actually incorporated guide dog access on the trains. But nobody knew. I was actually very interested in the development of all the systems, so I knew that the train operation legislation already say guide dogs are allowed on the trains. But nobody is more new. Only one reporter picked it up in 1987. And they asked the train company, why did you have this clause when in 84 we have to give up a dog? And they said that we are preparing ourselves should there come a day when guide dogs may be allowed in Singapore. At least we have it in place so that we don't have to go back and change the law. And a couple of years after the train started, they had additional lines coming on. And the bus company was allowed to take over one of the lines. So I went to the bus company with Ian Cox and I said, if I boarded the train with the guide dog on the north-south line, and then in the train network and move on to the northeast line, I would then be on the services of the bus company. So when I come off at the bus terminal, would I be allowed on the bus? They said, no. So you see, as a kind of guy, I was trying to corner him into a hostage situation. And of course, I worked with the Islamic Council. And in Singapore, it was thought that the Islamic community would have difficulty with dogs. In 84, when I gave up my dog, one of the reasons cited was to gain minority objection. And the Islamic population wrote back to the media to say that it was assumed on their behalf that they would have a problem with their dogs. They were not given the opportunity to express their view publicly. So that implies that they would say okay if they were asked. So in hopefully, I also had a discussion with them. And they told me that they are open to the idea. When the time comes, they will cross the bridge with me. So in the 05, with the office in place, the study council was affected. They wrote back to parliament, they said they support it. Bus company said if the Islamic Council support it, they will support it. The Housing Development Board said they will support it if it is allowed, but it will be on a one-to-one basis. They are not going to change the whole legislation across the board, but they will review every applicant individually on his right scenarios. At least the doors were half open. Okay? So with that in place, Guide Dogs New Asset, we will give you the law. Since the legislation will be put in place. So in July, I went in for a training. In August, the dog went up with me to Singapore. I spoke to the members of parliament and my dogs now in town. This work on it now, and in these 6 weeks, he presented his paper to parliament. This was one of the MPs. And on the 19th of September, the law was passed to adopt the use of guide dogs in all public places. The Public Health Act was then amended, and in 06 January, guide dogs were allowed in all food and drink places and public facilities that normally disallow pet dogs. So with that in place, the movement was up and running, and of course, again, Guide Dogs US was open to giving dogs to Singapore. No charge. Not 30,000. They didn't charge me for my dog. They provided that time 3 weeks accommodation. They met me at the airport. They sent me back to the airport. They sent me back with all the equipment needed by the guide dog handler. All without charge. They even wrote in the contract that my guide dogs will be provided medical support. Wow. As long as I need, All annual dog health checks and vaccinations will be covered if I send them the invoice. Should there be any emergency medical treatments and no time is allowed between the treatment and them saying, okay, let's go ahead, but if there's time to let them know, inform them beforehand before the medical procedure. And they also wrote, as a matter of arrangement, that I will get my replacement guide dog as long as, one, I want a replacement, two, it is still suitable for me to use a guide dog. So I now have my second guide dog from them. That's why I told you that it is actually my second working guide dog, but my real third dog. So that in place, guide dogs, US was willing to give dogs to Singapore, but on the condition that the guide dog organization be formed and work be done towards employing the guide dog instructor more to support dogs that are given and to prepare young people to receive guide dogs and also to support ongoing teams. So that part I will not speak publicly because there were a lot of issues that came and went and now there is a guide dog organization in Singapore. But up to today, there are only 7 working dogs after 12 years. That's no rule. Okay, that's no rule. Because the board that I actually invited to serve eventually got caught up with so many issues, more with name and fame, more with trying to use the situation to enhance personal ego. They actually declined the help of the US. They wanted to buy the dog. They felt that he who pays the master calls the fuel. So if they got dogs in the US, they will be subjected to foreign control. So they choose to buy dogs from Victoria Lab Dogs. I don't know to what price, but I was told it's $50,000. And the head of Victoria will send instructors over a couple of times a year. So it's more funded than paid for. My friend from the head of Victoria will really share that a bit, but we'll just leave those behind us, and now they are still buying dogs from Australia. So in terms of the VETOS program, it is now all supported, all privately funded. Donations come from the community. At the time when I started it, I had donors that actually were giving a lot of money to guide dogs. One donor that I got since 2008, up to today, still donates $50,000 every year to the program. And interestingly enough, when I moved to Perth, one of the guys was helping that company was working for the company now, is posted to her. And I met him in church. He came up to me, Cheng, I know you and I know Kendra. The time was Kendra, you think? And he was actually working for that donor organization. And yeah, still donating back to this year, 50,000 each year. Wow. And actually, I have several donors who are still donating to the organization. So in some ways, they're quite happy. The few guide dog users in Singapore are very successful. There was a guy who became blind at the age of 29. And unfortunately, he did not have a very good rehab program. His family would not allow him to leave the house without any sighted guide. So he was literally homebound. And when I met up with him, he was very hopeful that he will gain his independence. But he did not have good O&M skills. And one of the problems with guide dogs use is you must have good O&M skills to start with. And the US actually sent their instructor to assess him and felt that he needed a lot more O&M training. So I eventually had to have O&M instructors to train him. And after his program, he was among the first two to get his guide dogs from the guide dogs in Victoria. And his dog Sarita is still happily working in Singapore for 6 years. So he felt that sense of liberation, that he could now go out on his own. He doesn't have to wait for a sighted guide to take him out, and he's now going to assist by himself. And he's very appreciative that the guide dogs program came to Singapore. There were several others where their dogs now are happily using their guide very successfully. Of course, going back to my other part that I will share with you, how much more time do I have? I can talk to you, now you can tell you about the My first working guide dog Kendra started with me in 05, so she changed how people perceive dogs and guide dogs. I had a friend who was a volunteer with the Gladys Oyarowski. Each time when I walk into the room with my guide dog, she will be on the table. She was so terrified by my dog. But a couple of months into the use of my dog, she was sitting beside my dog. So there's a lot of change. When I first had the law change in Singapore in 2006, the first immediate reaction was, when I walk into a restaurant, dogs are not allowed, even though the law has changed. The first public building, I thought public building, but they're just private building, they're just shopping centers that I went to, was a shopping center near my place. Interestingly enough, in September 05, the law was not changed to 06. I went to speak to the building management. The lady in charge was called Tracy Vine, V-I. She spoke like a New Zealander over the phone, or like an Australian. And when I saw her, she was from Lendlease. You know your Australian business from Lendlease?
Yeah.
I was surprised she was from Melbourne. Mm-hmm. And she worked in Singapore for Lendlease, who was management of that building in Singapore. And she told me, if I come from Melbourne and dogs are allowed in all public buildings, I don't see why we should ban the dog. But since the law doesn't allow bad dogs into all the restaurants and shops, you can come into our concourse, but ask each shop before you go in. And we wait for the law to be changed before we impose on them, because they are the shopping center's tenants. They rent their place. So the management cannot impose on them. So we happily went there, and with my dog, I was then comfortable to use the gymnasium. Also in that complex, when I went to speak to them, this was also in October that year. I said that my dog now can take me freely in and out of buildings. I can move around quite safely in your gym, and I would like to be a member of your gym. And they were open to the idea because they knew that I could get into the shopping center. They have got my wife and myself as members. Why not? Two customers for a dog. And then, of course, when the law was changed, the management, Tracy, actually sent out a circular from the shopping center to all the retailers. The guide dogs are not allowed into the building and in all the restaurants. So, actually, they were one of my early partners in getting guide dogs allowed in Singapore. And as usual, when the restaurants say no, I would tell them to contact the management. And the management said, yes, allowed. You will not be prosecuted or persecuted. The same with the hospitals and clinics. It was a lot of self-advocacy work. Because the volunteers that I got together were just volunteers who want to help, but they know how to best do it. They were all just doctors, lecturers in university, a vet clinic who was willing to provide support to guide dogs. So I can do a lot of the advocacy work in the early days. Kendra then, of course, since I was actively involved in the World Blind Union, started traveling with me to all the WBU meetings. I was also providing technology to Southeast Asia, and she started traveling with me to all the different parts. She went with me to Thailand and Malaysia, but we didn't go beyond those places. Of course, with my guide dog, I could meet a lot of people in important places, because I used to attend meetings with my dog. And one of the multi-disciplinary conferences in Thailand, the princess of Thailand actually walked back to say hello to my dog. Mm-hmm. I got to actually meet her. Thais are not allowed to shake hands with the princess, but she came to pet my dog and she shook my hand. She met my dog three times subsequently on three more other meetings. The third one was at the WBU meeting in Bangkok. I think Martin and Kelvin was there. And the princess actually allowed a photo with my dog. So now whenever I go to Thailand, I'll flash that picture and everybody will be so envious. So the dog gets you many places. As all of you know, the guide dog actually is the icebreaker. And that was true in Singapore as well. The population initially in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, will tolerate dogs, but generally do not like dogs. But the generation of the millennium are all mostly dog lovers. I would say that 60-70% of Singaporeans are happy to see a guide dog. And now it's only about 30%. But mind you, even Australia is such a successful guide dog country. When I went to the WPU meeting in Melbourne, I went to a Hong Kong restaurant and immediately knocked someone out. Okay, so I know that all of you are comfortable in most of the places, but unfortunately, the Asian elders are still a problem to deal with. Even in Perth, just last year, I had a friend who wanted to go with me to Oshinoya. But he was so polite and Asian, he said, I'll ask the restaurant. I said, no, don't ask. He still went to ask, and he also no dogs. So in order not to embarrass him, I said, okay, Oshinoya is a multi-chain retail outlet. I'll call another one to ask and get his no for an answer. And then I'll tell him to go and look it out. So I call out another outlet in Apple Cross Black, and immediately he was a Singaporean student who was on part-time work there, and she said, no, dogs are not allowed. I said, yeah, you're from Singapore, and Singapore generally don't allow dogs, but it's already allowed there for more than 10 years. So she got the manager to speak to me, and he was a Japanese, and I told him, I have my guide dog, I'm coming for lunch. No, dogs not allowed. I said, yes, you're telling me dogs are not allowed, my guide dogs are allowed. You may not be aware, please check with the licensing department and call me back tomorrow. But the little Japanese is there, and he apologized profusely. And he promised to call up all his colleagues in all the outlets that guide dogs are allowed. So there's still a lot of advocacy work that we have to do, which leads me to another point. I socialize a lot with NAGDU, the National Association of Dog Guide or Guide Dog Users in the US, which is part of the NFP. I read a lot of GDUI work as well. Some of you are friends with Guide Dog Inc. in ACB. And I would like to also highlight to you a point that when the organization that gave me my dog had one of the CEO went and part of the program or policy which disadvantaged and killed guide dog users, they went out in arms. They called for blood, literally, to use the metaphorically. He was told what he was doing was not acceptable to the blindness community, especially the guide dog users group. He did not change his ways. And eventually, both an NFP and an ACP convention's resolutions were passed to remove him. Now, the reason why I'm saying this is just like all self-advocacy work that we have been involved in, I know that some of you are with ECA, some of you are not. In the US, many hate the NFP, don't like the ACP, but generally, there are blind people who train their guide dogs as well. And they don't have an organization to affiliate themselves to. And they found at least the that group or the GTY who they can associate with, who will continue to help support what they believe in the use of guide dogs independently and freely. In the US, while there's legislation to provide independence to guide dog users, they also provide another aspect, which I support, but I know that it opens up a lot of problem areas that guide dog users do not have to carry a permit or a license or a proof. Okay? I know that down here you have to get organizations to support your existence. In the US they don't. Because then that opens up a lot of abuse, and there are not people who profit from disability rights when they don't even deserve those rights. They actually sue businesses to get rich. So I know that that can be a problem here. So we need to check a fine balance. Independence is very important. Self-determination is very important as blind users. I really cherish that right. We call it the GDP in the US. Allows me to determine when my dog is due to retire. Of course, they still have a supervisory role to make sure that my guide dog is still up to scratch. They will still have appraisals with me to email, to phone discussions, and allow me to decide when the dog should retire, while they will also keep an overview of the performance of my guide dog as well. Your instructors are very important in your guide dog work. In Singapore, it's the same. We receive support, I think, from ACT now. my friend from the Bangkok CC could sort of confirm that. And the Singapore is not receiving services from the Bangkok CC as well, who's then at WACD. I don't know about the partnership with GDP, but I think it's still on. So your role in determining the performance of Bangkok is still very important to safety. But the blind person would and should still be the primary designer of the work performance of your guide. I now live in Perth almost a long term, and I travel in and out of Australia. And it horrifies me to realize that every year I have to complete forms to Qantas. I have to submit whole stack of forms to the quarantine department, and I have to get a guide dog organization to sign the form. But of course, Victoria Park in Perth is quite happy to support me because I visit them regularly and they know my guide dog, and they are happy to sign the form. But imagine that if I was not in friendly terms with guide dog movement and organizations, or I don't have the means of maintaining a close rapport with those organizations, that would be done. But of course, US can sign the forms, but they are remote, you see, so it's harder. So, GDHA, to me, has a very important role to evolve into subsequently. Well, I don't know whether you focus on advocacy. Working closely with BCA will be a very important part of what we do as well. NACDO is an independent organization for its own. It is a registered entity in the US, but they also function within the activities of the NFP. So they do meet every year within the NFP convention, which takes place for a whole week. The BCA convention is over the weekend, so there's not much time, but I see a lot of trouble in the itineraries. The various factors of blindness interest groups get together and promote your independent areas of your interest. They even have British car users. They are writers. They have all sorts of different groups that get together. And of course, at the national convention, 2 days are set aside for interest groups, and 3 days are set aside for the general platform activities. So, 3 more minutes to go. I have, as I said, more to share with you. I also have my trips to many, many countries that I can share with you. I will actively engage in your international travel segment. I believe that I also changed the thinking of your Australian quarantine department about guide dog travel. They now give me a permit that is good for 1 year. Initially, it was only for one trip. Okay? That was in 06. By 08, they realized that this guy is crazy. He's coming and going. We kept too busy just for him. So I got a few of the quarantine department to sort of think things over. And from 08 or 09 onwards, they issued me permit for 1 year. Come and go as you like. As long as the procedures are followed, do the medical, submit your forms 3 days before your travel, you'll be allowed into Australia. So now they even allow me the reverse. Okay, 2 years ago, they changed my permit condition because now I live longer in Perth. They now give me a permit to leave Australia and return within 45 days, and my dog will not need to go for a blood test.
Wow.
Previously, before I came in, before 2015, my dog is to always go for a blood test, which cost me $200. Now, that is waived if I leave Perth or leave Australia and come back within 45 days. I just need to get a government quarantine department to stamp on the document to say that my dog is treated frontline and dewormer, and that the dog has been in Singapore for a number of days. So things have changed a long way. Initially, Singapore was also willing to issue me only a one-time permit. Each time I come in, I pay them $100 import permit. Each time I leave, I pay them $100 export permit. After 6 years, long discussions, they waive the charges, they now issue me a 12-month permit. Come and go, as long as you keep us updated. So there's a lot of things that you can do. Some of you might even think of helping your neighboring countries to get going in partnership with one of your guide dogs organization. Yeah? I know that there are lots of things that we can do together to promote the lifestyle and independence of people with blindness through the use of guide dogs. So I'll be happy to, as I said, take the next session with you or answer your questions later on in the international dog travel part. But I leave the meeting now to Nadia to manage, and thank you very much for your time. Work hard and your life will be very meaningful and successful. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions?
No.
Questions? Ah, Ed, throwing some question.
Thanks, Jane, for that. That's really eye-opening. I think we're so lucky in Australia with the access rights we do have. Just a question, in Singapore, Singapore is an amazing city. I'm just wondering, where is the dog guide training school there, and who staffs it?
There is a guide dog association in Singapore. Unfortunately, they did not want to train dogs in Singapore because the demand is not that great yet. So they are still buying services from GDB and ACT. So guide dog instructors visit Singapore whenever there's a need or when there's a new guide dog applicant. So they focus more on O&M first and supporting guide dogs. They used to have a part-time trainer from Guide Dogs UK, but I think she has left as well. So I believe services are now being bought from Australia. So the instructor travels to Singapore a couple of times a year. No dog school, just the guide dogs organization looking after the activity and existence of guide dogs in Singapore. Focus on fundraising so that they can buy services from Australia.
Thank you.
I hope things will change in the near future.
Thank you so much for your fantastic speech. Absolutely awe-inspiring, just how long you persevered, and just amazing. I'm wondering whether the access in Singapore is localised to where guide dog handlers are residing, or whether it's, do you think it's right across the nation, that there's, if I turned up to Singapore tomorrow, would there be good access right through the country, or do you think it's still localised where people are doing, great works of advocacy around the local areas?
Yeah.
Oh,
is it
on?
Yeah. I think my voice should be loud enough, isn't it?
Not for the recording.
Oh, for the recording. You've got to be careful what I say. There's always these mitigations, The law allows blind people to guide dogs anywhere a human being is allowed. So the answer is yes, but you are right, it's also quite localized. Because the general population still has the mindset a dog is a dog. And we have a lot of foreign workers from different parts of the world where there is no guide dog access as well. And there are lots of people who manage the frontline service counters. Like when you step out of the airport, you go to the taxi queue, and the guy who's managing the taxi queue could be somebody from the Philippines, no offense to people from the Philippines or from India. And what they do is they go to the taxi driver. And that's the driver, would you want to take this blind person with a dog?
Yeah.
Of course, if you give the guy a chance to say no, he will say no. Right? But I keep telling him, you are here to move passengers and taxis on quickly. You're not here to rule on whether he says yes or no. The law allows it. If I came off the plane with my dog, you don't want to let me into a taxi. I can cost millions of dollars and there's no problem. So there's still a lot of advocacy work, which the Guide Dog Association in Singapore must do. But unfortunately, focus is on fundraising. So there is, unfortunately, a lot more doors left unopened. It is allowed, but people are allowed to get away big word as well. So there's a lot of stuff I can do. Generally, when you speak up for your rights, you'll get through. But not every white person is so quiet like me. If you say no to me, you will hear a big old story. The grandfather is not going to stop it. So, yes, it's allowed. But people don't know. Why would I want to lose my job if you told me a fib? Oh, God. So they always wonder whether this guy is telling me the truth. So, unfortunately, as I said again, the kind of users group is very useful. But I'm being boastful about what I know. But I mean, you need to speak up for your rights in Singapore. Because the law is such that it is very well organized, but when it comes to situations where there's not much benefit to others, nothing much is being promoted.
Okay, I'm from the US originally, and I've had guide dogs since 1983. In the US, in fact, as you're talking about Asian owned businesses or Asian owned businesses, unfortunately, is more common, even in the States. One of the advocacy tricks I always use, and it's a question for you, is this the case in Singapore? Do the police know the law, and are they going to enforce it? And I ask this because in the States, I used to be really militant, said, and I would go into a business and they'd say, "What are allowed?" And I'd say, "Okay, call the police." And I would stay in the business until they called the police. I remember one time I had a haircut, and the lady said, "No dog allowed." And then she said, "Okay, I set chair outside." And I said, "No, you cut my hair inside." And a friend of mine said to me afterward, "And you actually let her cut your hair?" Weren't you a bit nervous?
Okay. This is very interesting when you share. Even up to just this year alone, my Chinese friend in Perth, when we went to a Thai restaurant, we sat outside initially because it was a nice spring kind of condition. But when it got too hot, we wanted to go inside because the dogs were not allowed. So they were happy to serve us outside, but not willing to let us in. So I told him you're going to get a manager to contact the licensing department. But my friend told me, don't push the issue. They might put other stuff in the food in the food. Yes, the police are aware, and occasionally, I think now I can recall three occasions where the police was called. When one restaurant insists that it is not allowed. Again, it's a chain restaurant in Singapore. In one big shopping center, I discussed with them before going there because I was having a meeting with another guy on a wheelchair. And I told them that I was going to come with my guide dog. So issues were resolved, I came, no problem. I went to another shopping center 1 year later with my guide dog, same chain, dog's not allowed. We went on and on, finally he said, "I put you near the doorway." Now his concern was people would be upset with my dog. But if you put me at the doorway, wouldn't it be worse? I have to see the dog and not come in. But he only allowed that after the police was called. Because we went on for like 5 minutes, and somebody walked past and called the police. I didn't call, they didn't call, somebody else called. And the police officer came, "What was the problem? Oh, did they allow it? So they were caught in between, but eventually, he must allow, he's allowed. And then the guy compromised the situation at the door. Okay, there was another occasion where I, calling for taxis by phone is such a common thing, right? And I always call for taxis when I needed one, but I would not tell them I have a guide dog. Just like I would argue, why should a burn victim calling for a taxi at night tell the taxi company, "I'm a burn victim, I look ugly like a ghost, tell the driver not to get worried when he sees me." But, I'm not required to do that, so why should I, as a blind man, be required to tell them I have a dog? So I always tell them that I need a taxi, but I will not tell them I have a dog. But knowing that I'm a black guy, sometimes taxi drivers come, you get off, and you echo back, no show.
Yeah.
How cunning. Some taxi drivers will come, have an argument, give in and take me. And there was one, came, refused to go. But I already got in his car.
Yeah.
He refused to go. I refused to get out.
Yep.
He said, call for another taxi. I said, yeah, fine, I called already, you're here. But I said, can I take it out? I said, I'm already in your car. He refused to call, I refused to call. Eventually, instead of calling his company, he called the police. Jolly good. You can call the police. My now half an hour has gone. Gee, how much work you have done in half an hour? The police gave me a problem. No, the police didn't want to come. Because they heard he was only a blind man and a dog. But he called again the second time, so they came. Because they were afraid that maybe there would be a 5 days. So he told me, why don't you get out? I said, yeah, I'll get out if he called. Hey, he just called because he will get a penalty, you see, for not taking. So eventually the police called. I said, okay, good, you called. I'm not getting out. I think the next taxi car is going to take. What I was trying to do was to humiliate this first driver so that the other driver will see him. And he knows that he will be embarrassed by the other drivers. But the next taxi came, I went, no problem. So that was the second time I had engagement with the police. The third time was in a shopping center, again with taxis, you know. There were two other occasions in the taxi. And this taxi queue, I was in line. There was a tourist in front of me. She said that, I'll let you go first. Okay? And of course, I know that there will be a lot of taxi drivers who say, I will not take it out. But she was a French lady. So my she was going to be a fighter like I am. I sort of half suspected. Taxi driver came, no dog. Because he walked out his window to say no dog. She told the driver, I'm the next passenger in line, and if this man doesn't go, nobody's taking any passenger from this taxi queue. And she told the rest, I'm next in line, nobody goes after me. So eventually, one driver took. So there was no police, but there was another occasion where I also got in the car. He refused to go, I refused to get up. But because this is a taxi queue, is it? He has to go because other drivers are behind him. So he drove out and tried to get me out of the car, saying, no, I'm not going off. And I told him where I was going. He said, you refuse to get up, I'll take you to the police station. So, jolly well good. We can go to the police station. We can bring you home to the police station of your company. I'm happy to go. The police force was only 500 meters from my place. He drove towards my place. I thought, oh, happy, I'm going home. I said, in front is my building, but then there is a police station. He jumped out then there, made a loop, and went into the police station driveway. He went in and reported, he thought he got his case. The officer came up, oh, it's a blind man with a dog, no problem. He asked me, where are you going? I said, I'm going to the block one. Oh, it's down there, do you have to go? I said, yeah, I can walk. He said, okay, I'll write down this guy's name and his car number. If you want to report it to the taxi company, you can do it. I'm going to keep him here for half an hour. So, there are lots of interesting good and bad experiences in it. If you know how to work your way around it, I know that most guys and users are smart. Okay? We have to outsmart the system. And of course, the other story I really enjoyed and learned was Graham is going back to Perth, right? So there were occasions in Perth where drivers come by, I call for a taxi, and he would say, oh, you need a taxi, but your taxi is coming next. My passenger is over the other side. I know he's telling me, he possibly saw the car and he wanted to take off. And all of them know Graham in this story. Oh, he got a taxi driver to call because he said no to the commissioner of disability rights. So yes, police will get involved, but generally, most of them know the rule now. That's after a few years, yeah. Oh, there's one more story about US. You told me about US stories. I was told this story when I was in Guide Dogs for the blind as well, that there was actually a guide dog user who went to a Japanese restaurant in US. And the Japanese restaurant was said no to dog. And the police was called. And he was told that he'll be fine. He said, yes, I'll pay. they will pay to get rid of the blind man and his dog. But the joke was, do you think this blind person will go there a second time? For me, I will not, because he may come up with his gun. Yeah? Because he paid a couple of $1,000 fine the last time. Thanks.
Sorry, Chang Hong. Kevin, very good question. What about walking around in Singapore? All traffic signals, etc. What's it like?
This is a dog and not dog question, yeah? There are, actually, again to claim, I'm such a boastful guy. In 82, I studied in Melbourne, right? And in those days, you had to click the traffic audio light with the knocking sound, the clicking sound. I took one back to Singapore. I went to the roads department, got in touch with Jockey, brought one back in 1983. And after a year, they put it up near the Blind Association. And then when it broke down, there was 9 to 20 years later.
Wow.
So now they are actually buying the one that the module is electronic sound one. And they are beginning to install it, but only at places where blind people ask for. That is near their place, or near their workplace, or maybe near the girlfriend's place. So I was prepared to leave at that day. Then it came to the point where they turned it off at 10 o'clock at night, which is absurd. Okay? Why do you provide something and make the blind person dependent on it and then turn it off on him? I said, my mother doesn't tell me I must be back by 9 o'clock at night, and yet the driver tells me I must go home because there's a curfew. So I went to address the member of parliament. Now this is recorded and I don't care because in Singapore you're not supposed to criticize your MPs today. And I actually presented my case. I said, if my brother who's not blind is allowed to go anywhere he likes as a taxpayer, I should be allowed to go anywhere I like and feel safe to cross the road. The road department collects millions of dollars a day. So this will not cause them any problem to install this everywhere and provide these rights to blind people. The reply came back, not enough numbers to justify. Is it crazy? You want more blind people? So Kevin, it is too passive. People are still willing to help, but there are audible lights in strategic places. And I told them that this light at my place will not go off, please do not turn it off. And after a lot of negotiation, there's only one light that doesn't go off 24 hours. But the rest of the go off. Yeah. I think it happens here in Australia too, is it?
Yeah, I think
BCA has a lot of work to do. Okay? We should not be subject to curfew. My argument is, if I depend on the audible light, now I know that the NLB is going to come ahead with this one. At night, if I push the button, if I found it quickly enough, and there are no cars, I wouldn't know whether the lights have changed. So I miss one cycle, I miss two cycles, and then at night, in Singapore there's a fine cloth, no? Singapore is a fine country. If you do things right, you're okay, but if you violate the law, you will be given a fine. Crossing the road when it is against the traffic rule will get you a fine. So do I dash for it? Then at night after 11, less people for me to ask. So it is going to be double disadvantage. And that is a problem that must be explained to the traffic and main roads departments. I happily walk with my dog anywhere and everywhere, but because of the number of foreign workers coming into Singapore, there are lots of bicycles now on walkways, and Australia is fast becoming the same problem as well. Lots of bikes. Okay? And because these guys come from overseas, sometimes they think that it is a madman walking his dog. It is not a blind man, but they use a cane. So I will always have a cane handy as well. Unfortunately, that is life. And of course, there are many people who have verbal leash. You know what that is? They say, I call my dog, and my dog will come back. But when the dog sees another dog, happy time. They're going to say hello, right? Or they're going to attack. So, to me, the walking cane is another advantage. Okay? Even in my neighborhood, there are lots of friendly dogs, but there could be one that will go off, I don't know. So my cane is always close ahead. So I go walking, I like to walk long distances, sometimes I'll get up 2 bus stops from my place and walk.
Okay, Tino, we'll have to wrap it up.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
fantastic speech. We'll just have to wrap up because we're going to have to get into a group to take a photo. I hope this is not like herding cats. Herding guide dogs should be better. But certainly we'll be relying on our volunteers to make sure. We're going to be on the steps outside of this room. Apparently there's a great place to take photos. So we're going to get a group photo. Ladies and gentlemen, please thank Chen Hock for his speech.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?